The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation.
I had a long day.
Welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. I am your host, the dipsomaniac in chief, one K. Quincy Parker, joined as usual by my fellow dipsomaniac, a tippler of extraordinary grace and class, a man of great, as we say in the Bahamas, digosity, one Matthew B. Kelly.
Top of the day to you.
And we're going to jump right in to welcoming our guest this week, only because our guest has expressed an unfortunate, what's the best way to say it? She's had a long day. And is in desperate need of the kind of libation that we provide here at the Sunday Scotch Society. And I would say so much more about her. She's brilliant. She's a boss. She is one Katie Storr, Mermaid Katie, the superstar from the Mermaid Squad. Katie Storr, welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society.
Thank you for having me. I really love that introduction.
Good.
I wanted to laugh so bad.
Why?
Because it was great. Not laughing at you. Come on. Like, get it together. We have a connection here, Quincy. When I laugh, I'm not laughing at you.
I'm laughing with you. Okay. Yes, that is exactly what is happening. Yes. So, this week, the tipple on the Sunday Scotch Society is a sort of a favorite of mine, the Aberfeldy 12. Now, Aberfeldy is it's a production by John Dewar, the great blender, the person who is behind the name Dewar's. Aberfeldy is his hometown. And so this is kind of an homage to his legacy and his home and whatever. And so Dewar is more famous as blended scotches, but this is the single malt from Aberfeldy. And it's, like I say, it's a quiet favorite of mine, and I'm excited to share it with you all today. So, as usual, we begin, right? We live in Sanssouci, so I could go to Yamacraw, which was my father's preference, or Montague, which was my mother's preference. But whichever of those two, every weekend, and most times, at least once or twice through the week, I was on the beach in the sea. My brothers, as they grew to adulthood, had friends, as did I, went out fishing and sailing just to go sailing, right? Just to be on the water. We grew up with the sea as a part of our direct culture, not just existing, not just as something surrounding us, but something that we interacted with on a real daily basis, right? And when I went on vacation, the summer vacation as a child, and I went to Harbor Island or Exuma, it wasn't on the weekends that I was in the water. I was in the water from sunup to sundown.
Yeah.
And most times after sundown too, right? first real fight I had in the water, right? First time I pulled a knife on somebody was because I was done something disintegrated something to me in the water. In the right? water?
Katie's face is
in the water.
Well, I mean, close to the water, not in the water.
It's like, why?
Let me be very clear: they did not touch me or do anything to me in the water. I wanted to clarify that right now. Okay. But we were playing a group game on the beach. I quit the game, and this guy decided that even though I had quit, he was gonna toss me one more time.
And you ran hard.
I ran hard. Oh, wow. Yes. so, that was an unfortunate digression, but my point is that I grew up with the ocean. I grew up with the sea. Mm-hmm. I know how to clean a fish, right? I know how to scale a fish. I know how to catch a fish. Mm-hmm. I know how to dive off the dock in Harbor Island or the dock in Exuma. I know how to free dive. I know how to snorkel.
Yeah.
I'm not a brilliant snorkeler. I hate it. At some point, I will always swallow water through the snorkel.
Well, most people.
Most people either
swallow the water or they end up with the mass full of water and the salt water in their eyes.
Yeah, I could deal with the mass, but anyway. So I remember the sea very clearly. Right. I don't see anybody in the sea except on holidays now.
Okay.
And even those people that I see in the sea on holidays are older people.
And they don't go into the ocean. I mean, most people spend majority of their time on the sand and they'll go in like knee deep. You got some people who will go in and swim and stuff like that. But I think for the most part, when I go to the beach on a holiday, most of the people are just chilling on the beach.
Yeah. So all of this is foundation for my question, which is, do you think that we have an appropriate relationship with the sea that surrounds us?
No, I don't. I mean, for us, we were fortunate that we grew up in the ocean because our parents took us there and we were introduced to it at an early age. But for a lot of people, they weren't. And it's also not in our schools. So I think now they have some programs where you can go to like the national swimming pool. But to say they go to the beach and they do, you know, it's not something that, you know, even when I was in school, I think the only thing I learned about in school was like the parts of the conch. That was it. That was the only thing we did, anything that had to do with marine biology, and that was it. But I was fortunate enough that my dad always took me to the beach. I always went to the beach with my grandmother and my mom for like the church picnics and stuff. Oh, we would go to like, the island over there? I think it was like Athol Island and stuff like that. Yeah. And so I was always in the ocean, you know, and I had friends that didn't swim.
I got baptized off Saunders Beach.
Oh, you off of Saunders. Mm-hmm. Most people go there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that is how you do it.
Yeah. That was the place.
So, speaking of school, I remember the first time that I was in a potential school versus school standoff. Those of us from QC had gone down to Montague Beach and we were swimming in the beach, and these kids from one of the schools on Camp Road, I don't think that they were there as a school.
Oh, they were just there as a group.
It was just a group of them from the school there. And the guys were like harassing the girls. You know, their guys were harassing the QC girls. And one of the girls came and she swam up and stood behind me. And she's like, Quincy, make them leave us alone. And I'm like, now, of course, you can't tell a teenaged boy to make them leave us alone.
Yeah.
Because then he will become Superman in his own mind. And that is
alone, though?
No, of course not.
You had other guys.
Yeah,
there.
Other
okay,
guys.
Justice League. You didn't have the chance to get gang yet.
No. That's why I say potential school versus school.
Okay.
Not me versus a whole school. Yeah,
all right then.
But nonetheless, I felt like Superman. So I stood tall in Montague Beach in the water. And I said...
Sorry to cut you off, but he had a lot of standoffs on the beach. You don't think so? Like, all his fights was at the beach.
I didn't say all of my fights.
You're not being a great ambassador for the beach.
From the ones that I've heard, they were all on the beach so far.
That's because we talk about the beach. I mean, we can tell other stuff. I'm sure that there are adults who are listening to this show right now who have another kind of story about the beach. Okay, so let us not pretend as though I am denigrating the beach. Okay, the beach
is true.
The beach is a holy and sacred place in the Bahamas for many, many reasons. There are children who are alive because of the beach in the Bahamas. Well, the world over.
And baptisms.
Yes, and baptisms of different kinds. So in any event, and yes, Father Dean, I know you're listening. How do you grow up? My mother loves fish, but won't cook it because of the smell.
Oh, she doesn't like the smell.
No, she doesn't like the smell of fried fish lingering in the house.
Yeah, she don't. Right? Oh, you know it's a way to get rid of that, right?
It doesn't matter.
No, but seriously.
Okay, what's the way to get rid of it?
Okay, so you put allspice in a boiling pot of water. You got to put, like, a lot in there, though. You don't put, like, too little bit. No, you got to put plenty. My Grammy from Crooked Island, so I learned this from her. You put that in the pot, and you let it boil before you start cooking the fish now. You boil it so the aroma scents up the house. And when you start cooking the fish, you don't smell it. You just smell it all spice. I'm telling you, this works. She's been doing it for years.
I am not disbelieving you. My mind is in overdrive trying to figure out if this is a chemical reaction or a Sergeant Payne maneuver.
I think it's a Sergeant Payne maneuver. Cover one thing up
with another smell. Yeah. Yes.
But if you don't know the Sergeant Payne, is that you have some pain. Sergeant Payne walks up to you and says, let me do a little something. Take your mind off that pain. And then he takes your finger and breaks it. So.
Yes, and he has therefore successfully taken your mind off of the first pain that you had. So all of this is I don't feel like... How did we lose that connection?
Hold on. There's a...
Oh, here comes the logician now. Mm. Go ahead, Mr. Logician.
How did we lose that connection? So you're talking about a connection that you had and your experience with the people around you had. You're saying that you don't see that now.
Yes, that is precisely what I'm saying.
Okay, but you also experienced a lot of people who didn't go to the beach when you were growing up. Is that not correct?
Honestly, again, this is why I point out that I'm a little older than you. You too, by the way.
Yeah, only a tad.
Not just Katie. But most of the people in my circle were beach-going people. I did not know many people who didn't go to the beach, honestly speaking.
Okay, so I'm going to present to you a phenomenon from my, I wouldn't say childhood, but growing up, almost every boy could swim.
Yes.
And we did often. Very few girls could swim. Now, that was in Brylan. I don't know for sure what the culture here was, but when I came down here, it seemed to be consistent with the Nasuvian experience as well. What have you experienced, Katie? Because apparently all the QC people could swim. They got a pool there.
Yeah, they had a pool.
That is not a surprise to me.
But they also are Bahamian.
Yeah.
And surrounded by the ocean. Surrounded by the ocean, mm-hmm. And you don't know how to swim.
Well, no, go back to the 80s and ask the people, the girls of Harbor Island, And I assume the girls of Nassau as well, because when I came down here, there was already a lot of girls couldn't swim. Well, and I came as a student out of the public system. And some of the girls who also came from the public system here in Nassau couldn't swim. So when it was time for swimming in PE, there was a problem. And they were basically being taught to swim instead of going through the exercises, etc. Okay. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's not an uncommon thing outside of the, I won't say QC experience, but the schools with pools experience.
I feel like you're trying to call me privileged in a...
I'm saying that's a bias, that if you only talk about your immediate surroundings, that's a biased sample, which in this particular case got something to do with pools and swimming and classes and...
Well, okay, can I say something?
Sure.
Whether that's a privilege or not is besides the point.
So for instance, my mom, right? She was born in the... I ain't going to get my mommy age out. But anyways, she was in the era of Jaws, okay? So Jaws the movie, you know? So that terrified her of the ocean. And so she doesn't really swim. I mean, she goes to the beach now and stuff like that.
Please clarify. She doesn't really, or she can't.
She can't. She can't.
Not that she doesn't like to.
No. My mom, I've had, mommy, please forgive me. I've taken my mom swimming before, and literally she almost drowned me. Okay, so she has a really an instilled fear from watching Jaws and other shows similar to Jaws that have given her a fear of the ocean. And a lot of people are like that, because I tell you, most of my clients or people that I've had when I worked at the dive shop, you know, they'll, in that age bracket, they'll come to me and they'll say, oh, well, what about sharks? And what about Jaws? And what about this? And I'm like, you know, so I think that.
Okay. That so itself, at the risk of taking another detour, right?
Oh boy.
I've come around a little bit on this idea of the fear of the sea, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not irrational. Okay? Attacks happen. Getting freaked out happens.
Yeah.
Like, the sea is to be respected. If you think about the sea as a forest, wherein there are bears and tigers and other fairly large predators, with the only difference is they can fly.
Yeah.
Okay? That is the sea. Now, that doesn't mean you don't go into the forest. It just means you have to know there are flying bears and tigers in the forest.
And there are risks.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And therefore you need to know how to do it properly. Mm-hmm. Now, for the most part, swimming at the beach, this doesn't come up. You know, the attacks close in are very rare.
Yeah.
You don't want to instill a fear of sharks, because that's horrible for the ecosystem and the sharks themselves and on, right? But someone who I respect very much, who's in the marine space, posted a picture of a white tip the other day that they were very close to, right? And that is an awesome photograph. Like, but at this age, my mind went to, are there any people out there who are not having enough fear because of pictures like this? Because of professionals recording themselves who know how to properly handle sharks, who can flip a tiger shark over so that they become docile, etc., right? And going to get themselves killed because they just don't have enough fear.
Knowledge and fear.
I mean, I shouldn't say fear. Yeah. Respect. They don't have enough respect for what it is that's in front of them. So sorry for that little detour, but I just had to.
I don't think that's necessarily out of step with what we're talking about. I think that the answer to your rhetorical question is yes, there most definitely will be people who are reckless because they saw something in a photograph or a video that inspired their courage and they dive in unprepared. Yes, that is absolutely going to happen because people are people.
But does that outweigh the people that are actually afraid to go in there because they're afraid of sharks?
I think that's a false dichotomy. Yeah. I don't think that the two things are either mutually exclusive or even related. So I come back to you, Katie, as a.
Did we resolve my questions about this? Because I understand your mom is an example of Bahamian women not going in the water for a reason. Joa's big reason. All around the world, people got afraid of sharks. But I don't think that that's the core to this dichotomy between the ability to swim in an archipelago between males and females.
No, I think it's because
first
they
of
don't.
All is the wrong phrase. So go ahead. Kate.
They don't. Okay, for instance, we're not taught the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we're taught in schools or in curriculum or anything. No, we're not.
Unless you're in QC.
No, you're not.
Like, I was not taught.
No,
the
I'm just
ocean.
Saying. But you had parents that allowed you.
And the ocean was right
but
there,
you. That's
so
the
I
thing. There's
it.
Not everybody is doesn't have that. Cannot do that, Quincy, because you.
What do you mean? On an island that's 21 by 7.
Listen to me.
You could walk for 10 minutes and the sea right there.
Listen, so I did a kids' camp like 2 years ago. And I had a kid in my kids' camp that has never went to the beach. She never went, she never drove out west ever. She's never driven out west. So she never saw the things that the other kids were seeing.
You ever been to the beach in South Beach?
You know why it's called South Beach? I grew up in South Beach.
It's called South Beach because it's a beach out there.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, a lot of people don't take their children and they don't go because they have a fear of going because they weren't, this isn't something that they were introduced to because their parents, so this is generations and generations of people who are instilling fear or they're not showing, you know, they don't introduce their kids to the ocean because they're afraid of it. So then if you have generations of people doing that, nobody going to the beach.
Or
yeah, but I think that's the heart of my question.
Yeah, so.
Is what happened? Why between, and Matthew may disagree and say that.
I don't think it's between. I think it was there for much longer than you.
And I don't. Because I'm talking from, I recognize that my experience is my experience. Mm-hmm. But I do not think that my experience is as limited as you do, Matthew, or you, Katie. I think that my experience is fairly representative of my generation.
Well, if you, okay, for instance, if something is unknown to you, right? Generally, most people fear it if they're unknown, if they've never done it before, right? Until they get to do it, and then they're like, immersed into it and then they're given more knowledge and stuff and then they are able to change that fear into like, oh, I like it, or maybe even I love it. But you can't do that unless you're introduced to doing it. So that's my whole thing. Like,
what did you do with the child who had never been to the beach?
Took it to the beach.
Thank you.
But see, that's because I have been to the beach and I have knowledge of the ocean. Her
I don't know why Quincy is giving us this look.
That. So because they never...
Exactly.
I know, because her parents never did it. And one of the kids was... Her mom, that same girl, her mom was like, well, I didn't have this... I couldn't do this as a child, so I was happy when you were doing this. And I know my child always like wanted to do something like this, so I brought her into the program and I wanted her to experience it. So you do have parents out there that... Okay, they might have not done it before, and they might have a fear.
Allow
bit,
me.
But they're allowing their child to do it because they don't want them to have the same fear as them.
Not even just allow, though, right? Yeah. Allow me to tease this out just a little bit more, Quincy, right? It is a matter of proactive steps, even if it's only seizing an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? But imagine that you are a parent of a child, or both parents... You know, You cannot swim. Mm. Are you going to take your child to the beach to swim?
No.
You might.
I mean, you might, but there
it is. It depends on who else in the neighborhood or in your family. Exactly, right?
And so you can't help them.
You are not someone who can impart the knowledge, the skill of swimming to your child, right? You're just going to be way less likely to let them go out there. And then the natural rambunctiousness of boys versus girls kind of lends into this. Oh, it's not a matter.
Nonsense. Mm. That is poopy caca.
Okay. No. Let me clarify, because you're correct that I misspoke there, right? It's not the difference of rambunctiousness between kids, especially much younger ones, right? But it is an expectation that put upon them.
That is fair.
Which then, you know, plays itself out as if.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I agree. You weren't finished.
No, I mean.
Knock you off your trail.
That's I'm essentially done. Okay. Yes.
It all boils down to education. That's just, go ahead.
No, yeah. It doesn't all boil down to education.
It does, because if you're not educated about it, how do you...
It does not boil down to education, if it has to boil down to anything.
What is it?
Which I'm not certain that it does have to boil down to anything. But if it has to boil down to anything, I think it boils down to community. The reason...
Not too, but education and community...
So now it doesn't just boil down to education?
But they could...
15 seconds ago, it boiled down to education.
Forget you.
You forget me on that.
It is community.
On your podcast.
But it also has something to do with education. Is this why people think I'm
confrontational? You are confrontational, but just not in a... The intent is not what a lot of people think it is when you're confrontational. They don't know how to have a good little row.
No.
That doesn't mean anything beyond that.
You know, as friends, you gotta row.
Listen, as someone with Long Island blood, right, I understand. Because my mummy is a little more boisterous. And
well, you're from Long Island.
My father, my mom's side of the family is from Long Island.
Okay.
My father is not of that persuasion, and he just don't understand. And I can't have a good row with my wife either. She doesn't have that. Mm-hmm. So I understand the need.
Yeah. But a good row.
But not everyone else understands it.
Mm. As long as
that's my hypothesis.
That's fair.
We'll test it at some point.
I'm sure. As deeply as you think things through, I'm sure you're right. as long as the people with whom I'm conversing are into it, I don't really care what other people think, frankly speaking.
I like that.
I don't know if that's very conducive to community, though.
It's conducive to the kind of community I live in.
Quincy's community.
Yeah, right? Okay, so yes, education and community.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I agree with you on the community, yes.
Because if you go to the beach and you don't know how to swim, but your child wants to go into the water.
Yeah.
If there's somebody there that you trust, who you think if something goes wrong,
they will, right.
I can't swim.
But
I know Brother Mac could swim, or Sister Katie could swim, or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So I know they can look out for little Quincy if something go wrong. Then the issue is not really whether you can swim or not. It's whether you are in a community where there is somebody who could look out for your children.
Well, I think we lost community.
We lost
community. People, I just had this conversation the other day. I don't even know my neighbor. You know, back in the day, everybody knew their neighbor. My neighbor used to keep me when I was small. Like, now, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, welcome to Nassau.
Yeah.
No, it ain't Nassau. It's the time.
I didn't say it was only Nassau.
Because I grew up in Nassau. And I grew up knowing I knew not just my
They sure are good friends in Freeport.
I knew the neighbor. Yeah, you know the neighbor. Me.
Yeah.
Don't know what this word neighbor is.
I knew the neighbor across the street. I played in every house.
Everyone, yeah. Used to bounce from everyone, yeah.
The neighborhood that I grew up on a street where there was a business owner. And he made it his business to hire everyone who needed a job
in the community.
On that street.
Oh, okay.
In his business. Oh, all of us at one point or another
Work for this guy.
Work for this dude.
Wow.
Because you need to make a couple of dollars. Mm-hmm. If you live on such and such a street, or you live on what?
Allow me to forward a piece of speculation here. Right, mm-hmm. this can't even approach a hypothesis.
Harcourt Carter, right? A.K.A. Cody, and this was Cody's record shop.
Okay.
I do young. I said the wrong thing. I do young, but
yeah,
I know. I know about Cody.
You don't know about the Cody.
You've heard Cody.
You've heard the legends, though.
She doesn't.
No.
No, she's not.
Right. Oh my God!
I would love for you to talk about that off air, though. I'd like to hear about Cody.
I believe that it could be the case. I'm open to being wrong. That,
well, if you're open to being wrong, you most certainly are.
Unlike you, Quincy, I realize that I can err. I think that the inability for neighbors to we're in a new era, so I have to phrase this appropriately, yes, right?
Because your neighbor can hear what you say.
For real?
No. But if an inability for the neighbors to, let us say, help with the rearing of the child, has led to increased disinterest in your neighbors on the whole.
Yeah.
Because if your child can come over to my yard and be super rude and I can do nothing about it, then your child shall not come over to my yard.
No.
Period.
Yeah, times have changed. They really have. I grew up in, like, through Broome Street.
Oh, okay.
Broome Street, yeah. So, Miss Hyla, that was my Grammy friend. She used to straighten my hair. And all them yards through there, Miss Hyla used to keep me. I used to be in everyone's yard, climbing tree, picking canap, doing all kind of stuff. And I miss that, though. And I could actually still, like, if I think about it, I could still smell how through Broome Street smell. Like, I still remember that. It was a very distinct smell, but I loved that. Like, I loved going there. I was like, oh, are we going by Miss Hyla? You used to go down the street to the little tuck shop. And that was fun.
Tuck
but
shop.
You can't do that no more. Like, that doesn't, yeah.
See, that's the thing, is I you can. We just don't.
Yeah, we just don't. Yeah.
There are some communities where people still live that way.
Yeah, there are some communities people still live that way, but
they are
far and few.
And unfortunately, they are vanishingly rare because people's you know what? As much as I always want,
you've seen it here, folks. Quincy can be prudent.
I don't think I want that.
No, you don't want that.
But I want problems always. I don't want peace. I want problems always. So I'm going to sing. There's a sense of privilege attached to a certain kind of life.
Wow.
Right? We think only rich people can live in a community. Which is a community, even though our actual experience is different than that. Even though, if you grew up in my cousin used to live in South Beach, and my uncle owned a tennis court on Calpen Road, and everyone in the community who was even remotely athletic at some point or another, played tennis at Sheba's Palace Garden, right? My uncle was such a devoted trainer that he provided this space for people who went away I walked onto my tennis team in college and got a scholarship for playing tennis in college.
Wow.
There were
congratulations. Sorry, Quincy. Love you, Lords.
The point I'm trying to make is that Uncle Nathan created a community of people who he drew together through his love for and promotion of tennis as an outlet. And the number of people in the community, the Smiths, well, I won't call the names, but there are a number of people in the community who, the whole generations became different because of their interaction with him. Because you can't play tennis and stay the same. Tennis is a lifestyle. It changes the way you approach yourself. You become healthier. You become wider read because you're looking for stats and you're looking for information. Any sport does this, right? Whatever you become as you get better is different than the way you were when you started. And people grew and matured and changed. And that kind of experience is what people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for in certain places, like the Nick Bollettieri tennis camp in Florida, and tennis camps all over the US and Europe and wherever else, right? These people pay money to be able to go to a place or send their children to a place and have their children molded and trained and sharpened against other children who are being molded and trained and sharpened, and create a whole community of people who could play tournament level tennis. My cousin Sean and Owen, God rest his soul, they were the number one and two tennis players in their collegiate division. Not in their school, in their collegiate division. Because this is what that community gave birth to. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So even though, and Matthew may disagree with me when I say that people assume a certain level of privilege when we talk about the kind of community that we're talking about. But I think that the reality is that it isn't about privilege, it's about a desire for community.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we are different today than we were before. When I was growing up. Which has nothing to do with the blue community.
No.
Or the fact
But I still think that you made a point about the community. I think that's an issue. There isn't a community at all. Like, even when it comes to, like, for instance, like, with the program I did with the kids, there's no types of, there's no community initiatives for kids to do this kind of stuff, to even know this exists, for them to even be a marine biologist or, you know, like me, an ocean entrepreneur or, you know, a scuba diver or any of this stuff. Some of them didn't even know they could be a mermaid. Today in this age, you could be a mermaid. You can buy tails and you can be a professional mermaid and make thousands of dollars doing it. Like, so these are some of the jobs that...
Interesting.
Yeah, these are some of the jobs that actually exist out there.
I'm sorry.
This is a thing.
I'm sorry.
Have you not seen the net? There's even a Netflix documentary on this.
Wait.
Actually.
Okay.
My daughter made us buy her mermaid tails for years after she watched The Little Mermaid.
I have one too.
Maya still, if I go digging in her stuff, I know I could still find Maya's mermaid tails.
Yeah.
Right, no, and you're saying that there are women who are... No, this is a profession.
Yes.
And men, I presume, are making their profession. Yeah, there's
mermen and merwomen, like mermaids, sorry, that this is what they do professionally. Like, yeah.
How?
What do you mean how? Okay, for instance, one of my good friends, Mermaid Lindsay, okay... She's a professional mermaid. She has a company that's called Mermaids, Bahamas Mermaids. And she actually does, like, different shows, like, in the aquariums and stuff like that. And story times with the kids. And, like, this is her profession. This is what she does.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and, like, birthday parties. Like, people who have pools and stuff, they hire when the kids have, like, a birthday party at the pool. And she'll come in with her... There's a huge shell that she sits in. She has a mermaid tail. I'll send you the page so you can see. And she does story time with them. And she goes in the pool and free dives and everything. She's awesome free diver. And, yeah. And I also have another friend, Zandi, that does the same thing. She's a professional mermaid. So, And she free dives with her mermaid tail. Now, I'm saying I ain't doing all that. I is a mermaid, but I ain't going in the tail, and I ain't doing the free diving. I ain't going on scuba. But, you know, but that's what they do professionally. Yeah. And you can make tons of money from doing that. And you do, you get to do what you love and make money doing what you love. And
blue. That's orange and blue make, boy, I don't know what.
Some kind of purpley crimson. Go back
to color theory. No, is this additive or subtractive and color?
Kids don't know they can do this stuff.
They're opposite colors, so they probably make gray.
Yeah, they don't know they can do these things until someone shows them that they can. Because they're taught that they have to be a hotelier or a janitress or a hotelier. A lawyer, a doctor, these are the professions that we push, but we don't necessarily push anything in the blue economy, you know.
So I don't know if that's still true.
That is still true. We don't push any blue economy careers. We don't. These kids don't know but nothing but marine biology and stuff.
Okay.
And anything that they do that's like that, it's either an after-school activity or someone came into the school from, like, a organization and they talk about it and they're able to have an opportunity to do, like, you know, like a camp or, like...
So I'm assuming you're talking primarily about primary school children.
Yeah, primary school children.
Okay. Do you think that's an issue with the curriculum or with the execution of the curriculum?
I think it is. It's there. We push the agenda of one thing, and that is to work in a hotel or to, like I said, to be a lawyer, a doctor, those things, those professions. So that's why, like, in the yachting community, it's very small, it's very tight knit. You don't have, there's if I wanted to, when I started in yachting, I was very young. I mean, I started in yachting when I was 15, but when I actually graduated high school and I wanted to do, like, you know, get on the boats and work as a stewardess, I had to go to the U.S. to get training. So I spent a lot of money on my training in the U.S. And yeah, it was no avenues, nothing here for me to learn that other than what I was taught by my father. But, you know, because that's what my dad does. That's what his profession was. So I learned a lot from him. But if I wanted to get the certificates and I wanted to have the logo behind my name and, like, the three letters, you know, I had to go and spend the money to get the actual training and the knowledge and the education to do it.
You know? So you bring me back wonderfully well to your status as a blue entrepreneur. What is that like in the Bahamas in 2023? Is it easy to be an entrepreneur in the blue economy?
No, it's very hard. It's very, very hard. It's. I feel like it's probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Especially because a lot of my clients, I don't have Bahamians as clients. I have people internationally as clients that come in from all over the world. You know, I mean, I have people in America, I have people in the UK, then I have people coming from places like Italy, you know. So it's like, it's hard if you don't know how to globally market yourself or put yourself out there. You know, you have to do a lot of research. And then when they get here, you know, you have so many different variables like taxes and policies and, like, you know, things that just don't make sense too. Because everything don't make sense when it comes to that. But, and then some of it is also political. It's, you know, and it's also who you know. So you have to kind of position yourself so that you don't burn any bridges, because it's a small community of, you know, people. So, yeah.
So it sounds like the difficulty is not really in the job. It's in the corollary and ancillary activities around the job.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much like when the charters or the things happen. No, I know how to do that. You know, I'll work my, am I allowed to curse? Yes. I work my ass off, you know, and I get stuff done. You know, I could do the hours, I could do the work, but it's just the initial, like, you know, being hands-on with the client and getting them here or even marketing yourself globally to know, to, for people to know that you even exist when they come here is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's enough, like, yeah, we have a yacht show and everything, but to market the actual companies that are the smaller businesses that have services that, you know, service these types of clients, as you can see, all these boats in here, that we don't market them enough. That's a big thing.
So you also, in addition to being a blue entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed this, but you are also a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean,
this guy, he'll be here all week.
You need some sound effects.
You are a young black woman.
Mm-hmm.
You are the owner of your own business, and that business is
businesses.
Can I please finish? You are the owner of your own businesses, which are international in scope.
Yeah.
And what is that like, particularly with regard to our conversation around community and the blue economy?
You mean like being a woman?
Being a young black woman. It's an obvious question, and I tried to avoid it.
Okay.
But Matthew and I talked before, and it's like, you have to ask it, because it's still relevant.
So most of the time, you get judged. Not most of the time, all the time you get judged. People, men in particular, don't believe that you know what you're talking about. So that's the first thing. It's like, they already think you don't know it before you even open your mouth, you know. And from an international or global standpoint, for me, I've always battled with that, or had to deal with being black. Because outside of here, I mean, I had a conversation, y'all can tell me if this wrong, but I had a conversation with someone the other day, and it was like, in the Bahamas, I feel like racism isn't really, like, it is a thing, but it's like, you won't go look at Machu and be like, Machu white. Machu, he's a Bahamian. I mean, your skin color, you're a little fair, you know, but we don't look at him and be like, oh, he's a white, you know. Like, we don't do stuff like that. But when you go outside of the Bahamas and you go into America,
mm-hmm.
like, that's another thing. Like, they already think you don't know what you're doing because you black, he's a woman, for one, you know. So it's a whole different, I don't know, it's having to deal with that and then dealing with being a woman in the Bahamas. It's a whole lot of things. That make me get angry when I talk about it, so I try and not to, like, you know, I'm getting angry on the show. But
do you think that that male attitude that you encounter is amplified because of the industry and its size, or is you think this is just standard Bahamian experience?
The industry itself is a male dominated industry.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have more males in the field than you have women. So I mean, if you just look at being a boat captain, there's so many more boat captains that are men than females
mm-hmm.
in the industry professionally, you know. I could probably right now only count Bahamian women that I know that run vessels on one hand. Like, I don't know a whole lot of them.
Okay.
And if there are more, I would love to meet them, but from my knowledge, being in the industry, I don't know very much of them. So it is a male-dominated industry, and from a scuba diving perspective, on a global standpoint, just in underwater photography alone, there isn't much underwater photographers that are women either.
Okay.
And then with
the
scuba diving industry, it's, you know, professionals, even with free diving and stuff like that, it's still all of these industries are male dominated. I mean, females are now, women are now starting to like get into it and stuff like that, but
okay.
Yeah, predominantly males. Yeah.
So Matthew points out that, well, he asked a question about the male reaction to you as an entrepreneur, as a boss, as a participant in this industry. I'm curious about whether it is only men who react to you that way.
No, actually, women as well. I just had a thought in my head because when I first tried to get my business license, I won't go into the government stuff, but women just hating on women, man. That's just how it is. Women hate on women. It don't matter what industry you in. Like, women just hate on women. Like, they don't like to see such, like, you don't have women. It's very rare to have women supporting women, which is crazy to me.
Interesting. You know?
But no, you looking at me sideways like that, I am being really honest with you. Like, it's you. That's a rare occasion. You know, you have women out there. I ain't saying ain't no women supporting women. But it's very hard to find those groups of women that support each other and don't have, they just want to see you succeed, and it's not like jealousy or anything like that. You know, they ain't comparing themselves to you or nothing like that. Most of the times, you have people that compare themselves. You know, like, why are you watching me? Watch your own bag, you know? So, yeah, but I get that a lot, though. And that's why, over the years, my circle of friends has gotten very, very small in regards to women, okay? Because it's very hard to find women that aren't going to be jealous of you, that aren't going to try to sabotage what you're trying to do, you know, or badmouth you, or any of that stuff. It's very hard.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
I'm not going to say it, Matthew, so whatever it is that is on your mind.
Yeah, Matthew, you're looking like you have something to say.
Simply looking to see what Quincy is going to say.
Well, no idea. The only thing that I want to say in response to that is that it is something that I hear a lot from my professional women friends. That they find it hard to find female support.
Yeah, that is true.
And it is, but that's actually why I asked the question, because that was it seems to be a through line. All of my boss girlfriends, you know, they don't. But in any event, my last question, Katie, is the blue economy is. Huge field. It is, in addition to tourism and entertainment, as you say, it's science, it's business and commercial, it's shipping, it's logistics, it's all of these different things, it's research and development and so on and so forth. You occupy some ground in a particular area, but do you believe that we as a community, as a country, have the potential to truly expand and exploit the blue economy in the Bahamas? And if so, how? And if not, what do we need to do?
I think we can. I don't know if it's going to be in my lifetime.
Whoa.
We're making some headway, but I do think we have a long way to go. Reason being, because I grew up in this economy, and I've been, like I said, my dad has been working in the economy, the blue economy, all my life. So basically, I've seen the same things he has gone through. I'm still going through those things, you know? So, I mean, things have changed, but it's not progressing as fast as it should. I don't think that the powers that be are taking as, like, we need to be more, like, mean to take it. I was going to say grab it by the balls, but I can't say that.
Apparently you can.
Get it done. You know, like, what are we waiting on? Like, this is, like, the biggest, like, industry that we have, I feel. I mean, we don't really do anything with agriculture anymore, like we should. So, you know, there's people coming here for the sunshine and see millions of dollars flying in and out, you know, all the time, coming in on these boats. Like, why aren't we taking advantage of even just the yachts that sit here all year and stuff like that? Like, and how we could do it, I feel like we need to actually, we're not gathering information from those that are actually working in the industry. Although they say that they've spoken to professionals or industry professionals, I don't think that it's actually the professionals that work in the industry that are behaving. But maybe it's like some foreign influence. I don't know. But I think that we need to actually, like, come together, like you said, as a community and have more meetings and more organizations, more associations. I know for sure I'm a part of ABM. So, which is the Association of Bahamas Marinas, and I go to mostly all the meetings and stuff like that, and that is a great community that I've placed myself into, just because I want to be in the know and I want to make sure that I have all the information and all the resources necessary so that I could succeed. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of people out there that aren't doing those types of things, and so, and then another thing is a lot of things aren't mandatory, if that makes sense, like. So let's say if you want to charter your vessel or something like that, you know, most people, when they get a charter license, but you have people out there who don't even have a captain's license and they're getting away with doing these things. And, you know, it hurts the economy more than it builds it, because then you don't have people actually educated to progress the industry. So, that's a good question. There's a lot we have to do to get it to where it needs to be. Even so much as having Bahamian yacht brokers, that's another thing. Like, I could go on forever with the stuff that we need to do, you know, but we need to build more community, like you said. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, for me. Yeah.
To community.
Yes.
To community.
With the water,
it's even more smoother. Yeah, a little water, as I was saying.
Yeah,
right. You good?
We
haven't ended the show yet.
Oh,
so
I'm asking.
What are you doing?
There are many styles to end the show. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. Then yes, we're good. I'm assuming that you thought that this was the end of the show.
It was an option, Katie. You see what I have to deal with?
I want to say. I
like this show. I would come back on here again, not to talk about Blue Economy, but if it's any other topic, by the way, I would love to. And not because I haven't drank your scotch.
Next time you come on here, it won't be about the Blue Economy.
Okay, good.
Right? It's going to be a great conversation.
Okay.
But it had to be 2 hours.
It had to be 2 hours?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, we talk for 2 hours all the time. You know, let's get together, so we need to record some of them conversations.
No. I ain't getting in that one.
He's like, no.
Bye, folks.
Ta-ta for now.
Sayonara.
What is it I usually say? Das darovia. Das darovia.